This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9.
Everyone knows journalists don't make
reference. Is nothing sacred?
The things I still don't have to pay for is sex. However, if the sex worker in question was really attractive and that was the only way I was going to be able to get any action with them, then maybe I'd consider having it.
Sex, sexuality and gender-diverse digital radio station. We have a jam-packed show tonight, don't we, Jim?
We certainly do. And for those people that have listened to us in the past, you'll know that we occasionally talk things trans, partly because we have on our team Kurt, our trans man. And tonight is no difference. We are going to have another segment on trans issues. And we're going to be welcoming to the show later in the program Vicky Sinnott, who is a counsellor with a fairly big practice in the trans community, and Brenda Appleton, who used to be the president of TGV, that's Transgender Victoria. And they're following up some discussions that we've had in the past few weeks with Grace Lee, who's the current chair of TGV, and with Sally Goldner, who's been involved with TGV and Bisexual Alliance for a long time. We're also going to talk about dingoes, and we're also going to talk about growing up Islamic. So how's that? Trans, Islam and dingoes, all in the one show.
There might be some sharks as well.
We might actually get on to sharks. And our guest for talking about Islamic things is Aliena Muhammad Ali, who I've known for a long time. And she's just punching me in the arm, you see. That's just what you'd expect, isn't it?
Yeah, we've probably known each other too long. Thank you, everyone, for having me tonight.
Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Hi there, guys. We're on Joy 94.9, and you're also in Sydney on Sydney Star Observer Digital, which is your sex, sexuality and gender-diverse digital radio station up there in Sydney over Mardi Gras. Welcome, Sydney Siders. And I just want to let you know that that people in Melbourne know this, people that listen to Joy all the time know this, that you can contact us on 0427JOY949 if you SMS, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. And we'd like to hear from some Sydney Siders. We've had a few messages already from our local listeners. Hello, guys. We can hear you. And
so we've got today, we have Aliena Muhammad Ali. Hello again. It's lovely to see you.
Welcome, Patrick.
I'm in now. I know, it's random. We have been talking a little, we're going to be talking today a little bit about growing up as queer and Muslim. And also, I suppose, your current situation being, raising, you have two beautiful sons as of 4 weeks ago. Congratulations.
our younger boy is 4 weeks today. In
four
fact.
Weeks yeah, today, yes.
Newborn.
And
wow.
Here you are on radio on a weeknight at 10:08. That's pretty impressive.
I'm going to be asleep at 10:30. So quick for the interview, please.
Well, look, I was reading because you've recently you've contributed to a book, which was The Coming of Age, correct?
Which is going to be launched next week, isn't it?
Or mm-hmm.
At the Wheeler Centre, yep. On the 24th.
Yeah. And in that, you spoke a little bit about your past growing up, and also, I suppose, currently, you've been working a little bit with the Queer Muslim Group, which is a Yahoo group, from what I gather.
It is a Yahoo group. I set it up about 10 years ago, and I haven't got with the program and moved to anything more
doesn't matter.
Sophisticated since.
Well, the word's going out there. That's the main thing.
Well, look, I mean,
does it not have a stalk book page?
No. I have nothing against Facebook. I have my own Facebook account as well, but I just struggle to monitor all those admin type stuff and requests and things. So,
don't you have to do that on Yahoo though?
Oh, stop being critical. Let's move on.
I suppose, obviously, with this situation, I mean, when people are approaching to a group, that isn't on Facebook. I mean, Facebook then links to everything. Yahoo, you do have a sense of, I suppose, a privacy then, if that is separate. And for people, young Muslim queer, I'm just going to use queer as just the cover for our alphabet soup community, it must be having that ability to be a little bit anonymous at first and then steadily, like, if they want to come out and grow or, you know, sorry, and grow, that sounds very negative, but I mean...
Look, I think, you know, Patrick, you've hit the nail on the head because there is, yes, Jim, a Facebook group for the Sydney queer Muslims.
Yes, I found that when I was looking you up.
But it's a closed admin group, not unlike the Yahoo. But this is just it. On the Yahoo group, people join up. We don't ask them their names. We don't need to know anything about where they live, what they do. That's not important. What we do ask is, how did you find out about this group? And what do you want to get out of joining this group?
So what specifically is... being a Muslim and being queer, is there an automatic, they're incompatible? Do people often think, I suppose people think that originally, and I suppose you could then argue that Christianity has the exact same problem as well, but you do see people who are queer Christians and yourself a queer Muslim. So when people approach, is that what they firstly are struggling with, is that mixture of faith and also their sexuality?
I think for most people, whether they be Muslim or not Muslim, they've been told what being a Muslim is. Very few people explore Islam themselves, be they even Muslims. Mm. It's like, I guess, you know, many Christians and Jews who are raised in a faith. Until you get to a certain point in your life, you just accept what you've been told. You just accept the traditions. You accept everything around you because you don't find a need to challenge anything. It's when you decide to challenge something by doing something that's not what anyone expects of you, like in my case, saying, mum and dad, I'm not heterosexual, that's when people go, oh, hold on a minute, wait up, that's
not
what we've
been
told.
Does that mean you're not Muslim? Is that what they said?
Well, for my parents, it was more of a... the first thing, actually, my mother said was she was freaking out about grandkids. That was the first thing that went through her mind.
Seems to be a common one with everyone,
isn't it? Well, this is just it, isn't it? Like, everyone
that's
has
just a motherly thing. That's got nothing to do with Muslim.
No, that's true. But at the same time, for Mum, she also did believe it was just a phase. She went to an Auger boarding school, and I'd been through a lot of, you know, private girl schooling, and she was convinced that it was just being around too much of the X chromosome, and I just needed to be around more boys.
I suppose specifically with looking at the Quran, for example, you do mention this briefly in the chapter, is there isn't actually anything against it that says anything against female same-sex relationships. But they do mention male same-sex relationships, which is a common occurrence in all faiths and certainly is the reason why we had a lot of sodomy laws as well, that the women kind of were put under the radar and go patriarchy.
Story of our lives.
Yes, exactly.
I think the issue is that, yes, the stories of Sodom and Gomorrah and Lot have been just used in all the religions, and the interpretation is basically men who have sex with men, God gets pretty annoyed and decides, okay, I'm going to just destroy the entire, you know, town.
But there's more to that, isn't there?
Well, the reinterpretation of that story is, all right, we've got men running around and raping other men. We've got men running around and having sex with animals. We've got men running around and having sex with children. Okay, now we're going to burn down your town. And that puts a very different picture on it because it's saying that...
It puts a very different picture if you go on reading that story in the Bible and the scriptures, because... by the end of it, the daughters of Lot are complaining about they've got no children, and God tells them to lie with their father so they can conceive. So,
this is a beautiful mixture of stuff, isn't it?
Well, this is just it, and so there's that argument. It
shows you how the scriptures can be interpreted.
Well, this is it. So there was punishment for basically adultery, incest, bestiality. Inhospitality, because, yes, the travellers that came in, they were told, buzz off, you know.
And they were angels, unfortunately.
Well, that's it. And they were told that if you stick around, we'll rape you, so which isn't particularly hospitable.
Not at all hospitable. We will be coming back very shortly, speaking with Alina. You're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9 and Star Observer Digital Radio in Sydney.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9 and on Sydney Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse station in Sydney. Welcome, Sydneysiders. And we've got in the studio tonight Aliena Muhammad Ali.
Good old Alina.
Woohoo!
Has been talking to us about being queer and Muslim. Now, tell me something.
Oh, no. I've got to warn the witnesses that. He's got that look on
his face. He's got an evil look in his eye.
I just warned. They actually have worked together, apparently. So there's some history here.
This is the body language. I'm turning away.
It's not TV, so there's no point in that.
Well, maybe, Kurt, our panellist can just turn your microphone off, Jim, and then I can ask a nice question.
But I haven't asked the question. What is the question? The question that I want to ask is that... queer and Muslim, and queer covers all the letters. So are there gays, lesbians, transsexuals and intersex people and bisexual people in the group that you know of or you don't bother to ask?
I'm not aware of anyone intersex identifying, but LGBT has been covered on the group. Now, for me, it's really important to say queer because that's my politics and it's how I identify. And it's a bit of homage to my years of youth where I was basically shagging anything that moved. But more importantly...
Oh, I've heard about those years.
Thankfully, way before I met you, Jim, otherwise I would have jumped you, of course. Ladies and gentlemen,
this is the first we've heard.
Right, we're going into the adults-only version of Is Nothing Sacred Now?
No, nothing is
sacred indeed. Can you tell us a bit about the book that's coming out?
Look, the book is called Coming of Age, Growing Up Muslim in Australia, and it's published by Allen & Unwin. And the editors, Amra and Demet, they heard about me through someone in that I was a queer Muslim woman who had set up this group for other queer Muslims in Australia, and they decided to put a book together on Muslims in Australia and what it was like growing up here. And they didn't want to go with the generalisation stereotype, all right, well, if you're Muslim in Australia, you live in a ghetto and you're in full headdress, hijab, burqa, and you hide, you know, the women are oppressed and the men...
Can you be Australian and Muslim?
That's just it. So all of the people in the book talk about how their culture or their faith, how it shaped them growing in Australia and what it meant to be an Australian as well. But at the same time, the book challenges quite a few stereotypes. I mean, I feel very proud to be in that book because they could have easily gone, oh, look, let's not touch the gay thing. Let's just stay with a palatable Muslim that Australia will be happy to read about, all the nice little Muslims.
I hope somebody talks about the barbecues.
The barbecues? No, I don't know.
I don't think we want to know.
I don't think we don't know. We don't have time for that, do
we?
No,
I don't think we do. But
well, can you tell if there's anyone who's listening who is Muslim and queer, how can they find out about the group and get involved?
The group is a closed member group, but if you just do a search in Yahoo groups, you can find queer Muslims in Australia, QMs.
I found it through Google.
There you go.
As well.
Go yeah. Google.
Go Google.
And it's same for the book as well. If people want to get a hold of the book, to just Google Coming of Age, Growing Up Muslim in Australia, or go to the Allen & Unwin website.
Yeah. So
and you will be able to buy the book in bookshops fairly soon. And no doubt it will be.
But with one thing I will say though is that for me being in this book was, I've shared my story before, but it was really interesting knowing that this book would hopefully be a source of interest to a lot of Australians who may not know many Muslims as well.
Definitely not in my case especially, and I'm not sure about everyone else on the panel, but certainly that's what I enjoyed very much. I mean, I was specifically reading obviously for your chapter, but then flicking through the other ones, and it was fantastic because a lot of those generalizations which I myself had about the Muslim community were getting shattered right in front of my face. And although, you know, rationally you're thinking, oh, I don't have these generalizations in my head, they are there. And it's unfortunately, I mean, the media are influence from America as well. And it's something that I was very fascinated about. So
one thing, Patrick, that really got me on reading the book and being quite comfortable as a queer Muslim Australian, like my ethnicity is Pakistani, identify as female, I'm queer, I'm Muslim, I'm an Australian, all that. I'm very comfortable in my skin now. But when you read that book, you hear it's like an entire book of longing to be accepted, which is something I think us in the LGBTI community can really relate to. I mean, these are all Muslims who are growing up in Australia who don't feel like they're part of the fabric because, oh, they eat the wrong food or they don't, you know, go to, you know, Sunday school or they just speak another language. And there's this sadness in the book in quite a few of the stories, and then there's happiness in some of them too. But to me, that resonated quite strongly, this desire and need to be a part of a community, and that community is the Muslim Australian community, whatever that might mean.
Mm. The different facets that you just listed, how and you said you're a lot more comfortable with them now, obviously. But do you find that a lot of, I suppose we've already covered this, but certainly that a lot of people, it is trying to juggle all those hats. Like, I suppose you're specifically dealing a lot with queer Muslims, but in general, other people, is it that you have to juggle, I'm an Australian, I'm Muslim, I am my background, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Is it it's often that people are changing themselves each time, do you think? And eventually there comes this great synthesis that I am this conglomerate and it's magnificent.
Well, I used to say years ago that my life is a double-edged sword. Like, I am queer and I'm Muslim, and I can't be completely queer and I can't be completely Muslim. The world didn't sit right for me. But since then, I mean, I'm now a mother. I'm now, you know, well, I've been a partner for a very long time, but I'm all sorts of things now. So I think I do wear multiple hats. And yeah. I think everyone in this room wears multiple hats. So that makes me no different to anyone. We just have our own stories. And the queer Muslim story is still one that we don't hear enough of.
No, exactly. And it's something that I'm really looking forward to, and people to listen in on, read on this book, not listen in on the book, read on the book, which is Coming of Age. You can find it at Allen and Unwin and on Google, and there's a Facebook page. There's every, you don't have an excuse not to find this book, basically.
You could even go into an actual bookshop.
Controversy. No one goes buys books.
I do.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hello, we're back after all those announcements and that terrific song by Bikini Kill called Rebel Girl, which makes me think of a much better version of anything that Canadian skater girl, what's her name?
Avril Lavigne.
Don't bite, Steph.
Sure, they're much better than Avril Lavigne, aren't they?
Most people are.
Thank you, Ewan. That's our guest for the next segment. But people, you are listening to Joy 94.9 in Melbourne or online, streaming us online at joy.org.au or on the Joy app. Or you're listening to us on Sydney Star Observer Digital, which is your sex, sexuality and gender diverse digital radio station popped up in Sydney. And you will be listening to us over the next 6 weeks on as Joy is streaming into Sydney Star Observer Digital, which is great. So welcome, Sydney people. And if you want to contact us, do so. You can either SMS us on 0427 Joy949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. Or you can, in fact, if you really want to be old-fashioned,
You can use a telephone
and you can ring in, because Robert's on the front desk being program support tonight, on 1300 Joy 949, and if you do that, he will take your call and he will run into the studio and give us a message online, on a piece of paper, not online. But so we've been talking tonight about various things. So far we've been talking about growing up Muslim in Australia, and we're now going to talk about dingoes, aren't we, Steph?
We are going to talk about dingoes. We have Ewan Ritchie in the studio here, who's a senior lecturer in ecology at Deakin University. Hello, Ewan.
Hey, Steph. How are you?
Very good. Now, I asked you to come in because a few weeks ago we were speaking about the shark cull, and Ewan is an expert in top-level carnivores. And so can you tell us a bit about your research at Deakin?
Yeah, so one of the things I'm interested in is looking at predators, and that includes dingoes, but also includes predators right around the world. And you might say, well, why are predators interesting? Well, it turns out that predators are really important for a whole range of reasons. And I've just worked with some colleagues right around the world, so from America, parts of Europe, and elsewhere. And we've looked at the 31 largest carnivores in the world. Okay, so we're not talking about seals, but only talking about on land, but imagine big bears, wolves, a lot of the big cats. And it turns out these predators are in a lot of trouble. So about 3/4 of the predators around the world are in decline. And what's bad about that, of course, is, well, it's tragic to lose any species. All species have a right to exist, I would argue, aside from their importance to humans. But they're also really important in terms of the effect they have on the environment.
I find it interesting that you say you might ask why predators are interesting, because I think predators are very interesting and certainly something that the public is interested in. I think a lot of people would have a strong affinity with, well, yeah, bears and like the larger animals, one with charisma and excitement.
It's true. We gravitate towards some predators, but there's also an innate fear of predators. No one wants to be eaten by a predator, and it is ranks among one of the highest fears that humans have, and rightfully so. And of course, we've had tragic incidents recently with people being eaten by sharks. And unfortunately, you know, that actually does feed a hatred by some, I guess, parts of the community and a want to get rid of predators. So that's, I guess, why I say that we can't always assume that everyone thinks the same way. So we have to then make the case about, well, if we actually do get rid of these predators, what are the consequences both for the species themselves, but also for humanity and for our environment?
But our main land-based predator surely is cars.
You know, it certainly is.
We're not like the North Americans who have bears and wolves and cougars all in the one hit.
It's absolutely true. I mean, when people come to Australia, they're paranoid about spiders and snakes. But you know, you're more at risk of walking through Canada or you know areas where there's polar bears or jumping in the, you know other areas. So Australia's relatively safe by world standard. You're quite right.
When you were talking before about if we were to lose these big predators, what would be at stake? Is there any examples that are glaring to you that you would see, if you know, if one was to just drop off right now, what could be caused that we maybe wouldn't have realised?
So I think one of the most interesting examples, and this is something that people would never have thought of. So if you, in Africa, leopards and lions have declined quite dramatically. And you might think, well, okay, that's tragic, but you know, end of the story. What consequence is there? Well, what if I told you, because of losing leopards and lions, there's now children in Africa that can't go to school? And you say, well, what's the connection? So it turns out, of course, when you lose lions and leopards, their major predators are baboons. And baboons have increased dramatically in their numbers in the absence of lions and leopards. And what that's meant is that children have to stay home to defend their crops with their families because they're being raided by baboons. And they're also getting sick because of baboons increasing in numbers and bringing parasites into contact with humans.
And baboons are not very nice animals.
I would take my chances probably with a lion over a male baboon. A male baboon is a fearsome animal.
Wow.
I've seen them in the wild and they're not very nice.
They're not nice at all. I mean, they're wonderful animals, but they are very fearsome. So, yeah.
What about closer to home?
Closer to home, the dingo obviously is an interesting case in point. It's a highly controversial species. But it also turns out now that we know that the dingo has a lot of benefits, both for pastoralists, ironically, but also for the environment. So in terms of the environment, we now know that dingoes do a really good job at controlling feral cats and red foxes, and there's no effective broad-scale control for those two species. And those two species have decimated Australian wildlife since Europeans turned up. So the main reason for why a lot of our, you know, cute and furries, if you like, our small mammals have disappeared from Australia is being eaten by foxes and cats. The one thing that actually does a relatively good job at controlling those is the dingo. The dingo also does a very good job at controlling things like kangaroos and wild goats and even rabbits. And so when we're talking about spending millions of dollars on pest management, we've got this animal out there doing it for free, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and but we're actually getting rid of this animal.
The decline in dingoes has meant the increase in wild dogs, hasn't it? And they're much less...
That complicates the issue, because the more we interfere with dingoes, the more they're likely to breed with wild dogs too. So it's a very complicated issue.
If you have any questions for Ewan, I think people should text in on 0427JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We'll be back after this break.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Yes, you're on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9 and Sydney Star Observer Digital, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse station in Sydney. Welcome, Sydneysiders. And we're talking to Ewan about dingoes and high-level predators, but dingoes being the Australian variety. I suppose they are the only high-level predator apart from funnel web spiders and things like that, aren't they?
On land, of course, humans are number one, but below that, on land in Australia, yes, dingoes are pretty much our only top predator. And that's an interesting case in point, because we used to have a lot more top predators, but they're now gone. So we used to have the thylacine, of course, the Tasmanian tiger, a marsupial lion, a huge goanna called Megalania, about 5 metres long. They're all gone. And now the only top predator we
have... And Tasmanian devils,
even on the mainland. We had a mainland devil, and that, of course, is gone as well. And, of course, Tasmanian devils are not doing very well in Tasmania. So the dingo actually has a critical role now in Australia on the mainland to actually help keep some of these other animals in check.
I feel really disappointed that I missed out on seeing a marsupial lion.
Me too.
That would have been amazing.
If a TARDIS does exist, that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Wow. Now, one of the reasons that I asked you to come on the show is because we're talking about sharks a few weeks ago. And, of course, we know there's the shark cull in Western Australia. What are going to be some of the impacts of that cull?
Well, that's a great question. And one of the disappointing things about that is we probably won't find out because the government actually isn't doing any monitoring at all.
Oh, we've already seen it, though. Somebody got eaten off Edithburg. Just pushed it round the corner.
Yeah. Well, in terms of people getting eaten or not eaten, we do know from the rest of the world that culling sharks is very unlikely to have any impact at all. And the reason for that is that great white sharks and things like tiger sharks as well actually move huge distances, in some cases thousands of kilometres. So unless you're prepared to kill all the sharks in the ocean in the world, you're not actually going to have an effect at a local scale, because as soon as you stop, those big sharks will come back. And that happened in Hawaii. They killed several thousand sharks. Shortly after they finished killing sharks, someone was attacked by a shark. It doesn't actually increase safety. And in terms of the environmental effect, we know, again, from around the world that when you get rid of large sharks, often species below them increase in number. And you might say, well, that's good, there's more fish. But some of those fish will actually eat smaller fish, which might be commercially valuable. So fisheries have actually suffered. So where we've lost sharks, scallop fisheries have collapsed. So we've got to not think, you know, if we get rid of one species, there won't be flow-on effects.
Do you think, will the species recover? So the sharks that are killed, will that have an impact over the long term?
Well, the great white shark, as you probably are aware, is already an endangered species. So it already can't sustain any more killing. These are long-lived species and they take a long time to reproduce. So any culling of a great white shark is not a particularly good idea. Other species like bull sharks and tiger sharks, of course, have got higher populations. But I think beyond the species recovering, I think, you know, the ecological importance of those species is really important. So the moment you take top predators out from an environment, there's going to be effects.
How can the government reconcile, you mentioned a species that's endangered and it's presumably then protected under Australian legislation. How is that, those two things reconciled?
Yeah, so Greg Hunt made an exception to the EPBC Act to allow the great white shark to be culled under these orders. So it was
an
exception.
The Australian people made an exception to Greg Hunt.
I make an exception. So it sounds like there's going to be pretty, you know, big impacts. Is there anything that we can do as individuals to help protect sharks or other large carnivores?
I think the frustrating thing is there's lots of solutions we already have at hand rather than just killing sharks. So we could put in nets for people to swim in and then give people the choice. You can swim in a safe environment or you can make the choice to swim in the environment of sharks. We can also actually catch sharks, tag them with radio collars essentially, see where the sharks are, drag them out to sea, and then release them. If they come back to shore, you can catch them again, take them out. I've done that in Brazil and it works really well. We can increase patrols for sharks. We can increase the public education about how to swim safely or at least reduce your chances of shark attack. There's a whole range of things.
There was a really good program on the ABC just recently about sharks off the southwestern tip of Western Australia. And they were trying to work out what the major predator was, because there was a shark that they'd tagged in Port Lincoln that was killed there. And they were trying to work out what on earth killed it. And they thought it was a killer whale. It turned out that it was another huge great white, another white pointer had killed this big sort of 5-metre white pointer shark because it had swum into its territory.
Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
It top-predated itself, its own species.
When predators become prey.
What's this about sharks tweeting? Is this running out of this same, you know, idea of tagging sharks?
Yeah. If you're talking about tweeting, there's also a shark that has its own Twitter page. So the shark popularity has definitely risen to prominence since the shark cull. But I think the technological solution is actually really interesting in terms of culling these sharks and then actually seeing where they are in the ocean. And then you can actually say, hey, are they coming close to the beach and are they becoming a risk?
Shouldn't we then just encourage some people to go and swim in those beaches?
You said that, not me.
I did. I'll give you a list of suburbs.
Oh, dear. It's been 5 minutes since you said something controversial, so I was worried about what was coming up. Thanks very much, Ewan, for speaking to us. I think if anyone has any questions later in the show, maybe we can contact you to answer on our Facebook page.
More
is that
than
all
happy
right?
to.
Excellent.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks very much.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Yes, people, you're on Joy 94.9 on Is Nothing Sacred and you're on Sydney Star Observer Digital Radio in Sydney, your sex, sexuality and gender diverse radio station, which is a pop-up digital station in Sydney. So welcome, Sydney people. And we've now got in the studio some more guests. So having talked about dingoes and top predators, we're talking to another couple of top predators. So we're talking to Brenda Appleton and Vicky Sinnott. And Brenda was for a long time, I think she will probably lean across and slap me if I say too long, the president of Transgender Victoria. And Vicky Sinnott is going to tell us in a minute what she does in the transgender community. But the reason why Vicky is here is because all of our transgender guests up till now have actually raised Vicky's name as somebody of importance to them. So, Brenda, we asked you to come on because we have had a number of other trans women on the show over the past few weeks talking about issues of significance to them. And you have a long history in the community, and you're also a member of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on GLBTI Alphabet Soup Matters, I believe.
Yes, certainly I am. One of my interests is trying to provide support to the trans community, particularly around mental health issues. And yes, I have been involved with TGV. I've been on the committee for about 12 years, and I had 11 years as co-convener. One of the things we're excited to be launching this week is, in fact, an anxiety support group, which is aimed at members of the community. We're running it in conjunction with Anxiety Recovery Centre of Victoria, and this is going to be available to members of the community who want to, I guess, support each other and learn from each other.
Brenda, is it only for members of the trans community, or are other people welcome as well, like allies and partners?
At this stage, it's just for members of the community. We want to provide a safe environment for people, many of whom might not be out, to be able to talk and discuss the issues that they're facing, and I guess learn from others that might be a little bit further progressed on their journey.
And how do people get in contact with this group? Through TGV's website?
Or? Yes, through TGV or Anxiety Recovery Centre of Victoria. We've got it extensively on our Facebook page, and we look forward to having a number of people. We're running it on the second Wednesday of each month and on the fourth Saturday.
That sounds like a very good initiative. So, Vicky, let's turn to you. Why has everybody mentioned your name when they've come on here as guests?
I'm not sure, but what I do is...
It was in a nice way, I have to say. Nobody was being rude about you. They were all being totally complimentary.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's very humbling. But I've worked for a couple of decades now, I suppose, if I'm wanting to disclose my age. Probably about 25 years or so as a therapist, working with young people and adults around issues of sexuality and gender, sexual function. So I see people individually and either in the short term or the long term, work with people as a therapist.
So are you one of those people that when people start to begin their transition and they go to a GP and the GP says, you need to go and get therapy for this and talk to somebody through... Are you one of the people that is on the list of people to go and talk to?
Yeah, sure. I'm on one of an increasing number of people who are on the list that individuals can go to. I think what's probably useful to distinguish is seeing a psychiatrist, which is the common medical transition pathway for a consultation, assessment, diagnosis, those sort of medical terms that happen through a psychiatrist. What people would come to see me for is much more around their internal experience rather than actually getting a signature on a piece of paper and how they actually deal with coming out, transitioning, not transitioning, telling people, informing work, but also an internal world process in their history.
There's so much more to transitioning than just the hormones.
Absolutely.
And just the physical appearance changing. There's, you know, for female to male, fitting in with the sort of male social world. And because you never really got to, you know, I never really got to, you know, have, you know, sort of be in the boys' bathroom or anything when I was younger, and now I am. And it's completely different.
Yeah. And I think there's also, even within that, example of not being, you know, not knowing toilet culture, which is a pretty curious thing about male toilet culture. But
is it?
So I hear.
Yeah, putting the seat up or down is an important thing.
But there's so there's those sorts of things. What's sort of common practice? What's okay? What's not okay? Is it okay to only use cubicles? All of those sorts of things. But then there's also how do I feel with whatever I do?
Yeah.
How do I manage it versus and how do I feel about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and getting sort of plans in place for when I feel this, what should I do? Sure. And yeah, it's really good to be able to talk to someone about that and someone who understands the transition process rather than someone completely out of the loop, just, you know, trying to deal with your problems with you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's an important part of for everybody is just getting coping skills and learning how to cope with the changing circumstances. And none of us are suffering sickness of the mind, but we do need help getting living day to day.
I think that's sickness of the mind is something that is actually a lot more common if we want to call mental health issues sickness of the mind. As a population, we experience anxiety and depression with, you know, quite high proportions of the population experience that, and the trans community is no different.
Yep, definitely. Thank you very much for chatting with us tonight. It's been great to have you two ladies.
If anyone has any questions for our guests, we're going to go to a short break and then come back and we'll be taking questions. So you can email us at onair@joy.org.au.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You're with James, Kurt, Steph and Pat on Is Nothing Sacred? Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9 or on Star Observer Digital Radio in Sydney. It is 9 minutes to 11 and we are talking to Brenda Appleton and Vicky Sinnott about transgender people and counselling and challenges people face in the day-to-day. Apparently, bathrooms are quite a contentious place. I'm now quite curious to know what happens in men's bathrooms. I think I'm never going to know, but I will remain curious.
We will talk to you about that off-air later.
Thanks, Jim.
Now, if people have got queries and concerns about the sorts of things that we've raised, and we have raised a number of things over the past few weeks about trans issues, you can go to our Facebook page and we will post on the Facebook page the way in which people can contact Vicky and at her practice, and she has a website, so we'll put that up on the page. And you can contact Transgender Victoria through their web page, which is what, Brenda?
transgendervictoria.org.
Just .org.
Yes.
No, not AU. So transgendervictoria.org, or you can Google Transgender Victoria. That'll take you there for sure.
Can I ask a question? So as well as, I guess, the issues that you've spoken about before, is there anything that your clients come to you with that maybe people who are not within the trans community might find surprising in terms of, I guess, other things that we haven't, that cisgendered people just don't think about as being challenging?
Well, I think there's a whole range of things that cisgendered people don't question and don't explore. I was actually putting a sticker on my filing cabinet at home that said, "Have you ever questioned the way you do your gender presentation?" And it's one of those things that cisgendered people often don't think about at all, and we have a whole lot of assumptions and experiences about, well, that's just the way it is. You know, girls are just like that, or boys are just like that, or men are like that, or women are like that. And
or she's just acting like a girl. It's a common thing you hear.
Either two girls or two boys. Like, so all of those spins on the way that we think gender happens often takes a whole lot of time and effort to pull apart and understand. And so why is it that I think that it's unusual for a boy to like pink? You know, why, as a family, might a family be uncomfortable about a child saying, I think I'm a girl, when in fact they don't, they haven't seen their child act like a girl or their parent act like not their dad or their mum. So I think there's a whole lot of assumptions.
I think one of the great things in today's world is that people feel, young people, are feeling much more comfortable to explore their gender. They're not being driven into the binary of male or female. And we're seeing a lot more gender fluidity, particularly in the younger people, and with some of the younger parents able to allow their children to explore that. And I think it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're lucky in this day and age that it's become more of a normal thing, just like being gay or lesbian. It's sort of, it's a bit more, I hate to use the word normal, but it is a bit more...
Acceptable.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, just like, you know, decades ago when it, you know, it wasn't
There's
really...
There's no way we could call you normal.
Normal than you, Jim.
And we're not even
going to
start.
Just putting it out there.
We're not even going to start.
Now, I believe that there's a conference coming up about with transgender people. Can you tell us a bit about the conference?
There are actually three, now that I think about it. So there's a couple of professional organisations. The International Professional Organisation has a conference every 2 years, and that's coming up next, or at the end of this week, actually, in Bangkok. So that's the World Professional Association for Transgender Health Conference.
Assuming there's not a military coup.
That's right, assuming, and we're all hoping, those of us who are travelling over there, that there's not going to be a military coup in the middle of Bangkok, in the middle of the conference. But that'll have about 450 people from around the world come together in Bangkok. Then the Australian equivalent, the Australian and New Zealand Professional Association for Transgender Health, we'll have our biannual conference in October in Adelaide. And there's a one-day conference coming up with an international guest speaker from the UK who works specifically with children and adolescents. And that's coming up in May. So this year is an incredible year for professional development, unlike many other years in the past where there's been very little professional development available.
Well, hopefully we'll get some of you back at least to talk about the results. You're going to the Bangkok conference, aren't
I am.
You, Vicky? We might get you back in after the Bangkok conference
sure.
to talk about what some of the findings were there.
Happy to share what I learn.
Great.
The other big conference that's coming up is World AIDS in July 2014, in July. And there's expected to be 15,000 to 16,000 people in Melbourne for that conference. And there could be more than 750 trans people. So it will be a huge conference and a lot of well-attended from overseas.
It's the biggest medical conference in the world, and but mainly because it has spin-offs in the non-medical fields as part of the conference program. Mm.
Well, it is 3 minutes to 11, so I think we're going to wrap up this conversation. As always, you can contact us on our Facebook page and ask questions of our guests tonight. Thank you very much for coming along and talking to us. Thank you also very much to our other guests, to Alina and to Ewan for chatting with us today. We've had a very, very full show. So please send us an email at onair@joy.org.au if you have any last-minute questions. Anything to add, Jim?
And after us tonight is the usual show, and Mark has just come into the room. Mark with in the woods, the bears show. And
wolf.
There, did you hear that? He just growled in here. He thinks he's a cross between a dog and a wolf.
Well, we have been talking about top predators tonight, so it seems appropriate for these bears to be following our Is Nothing Sacred
show. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will be back next week.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.